The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
What up, Grizz Nation? You're tuned in to the Hoop Ball Grizz Podcast. Isaac Simpson with you, and you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals, ISAAC _Rivals. With me, my partner in crime, you can find him on Twitter at DWill2111. It's my man, David Williams. David, how you doing today, sir?
And I am good. A lot of buzz going around right now. Trade talks, and just I was ready to do this episode anyway. We're getting closer. We are less than 7 days away from the draft, and I can't wait. And today has just been, it's even added to that fuel, man, because of the discussions here that we're going to get into.
Yeah, definitely, man. For 4 days out, man, I mean, we've been talking about these prospects, man, doing a podcast. I mean, it's been a lot of fun breaking these guys down and talking about it, man. We're almost here, but trade winds are swirling, David. I mean, Jake Fisher, a Bleacher Report, and I know a lot of people kind of scoff when you bring up Bleacher Report, but this is one of their major reporters, man. I think he has like 18,000+ followers on Twitter, so this is not one of those kind of fan-sided type trade things. I mean, this is a real report, and Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report says today the Pelicans have generated traction with the Grizzlies in a deal that would send a 10th pick and Eric Bledsoe to Memphis for the Grizzlies 17th pick. And I mean, that excites me. I mean, I think if you're the Grizzlies, getting up to 10, I think you look at the Grizzlies sitting at 17. I think getting up to 10 kind of puts you in a different tier of player. And when you look at the timeline with John Jaren, you to be able to get a top 10 pick and another guy to kind of grow along with what you think are your two cornerstone pieces. I think if they can do that without giving up too much, and in this scenario, they're not even giving up any future draft capital. If you can get up to 10 by just absorbing Eric Bledsoe's contract, now it's a massive contract for this year, but the thing about it is it's only for 22-23, it's only guaranteed for $3.9 million. So you're really taking on that contract for 1 year. And I think, if they do make this move, make no mistake about it, it's not about Eric Bledsoe. They're not going out trying to get a $18 million backup point guard, but it's about getting that 10th pick. But I think, and I would hope this wouldn't turn into an Iggy type situation. I would hope if they do make this move, Eric Bledsoe does show up, report to camp, and they have him in uniform, because I think for a year at least, he's a upgraded backup point guard over time.
In a landslide.
I know it. And I've been having conversations with people all day on Twitter, and it's people telling me that Tyus is a better player than Eric Bledsoe. There's no disrespect to Tyus at all. I mean, I like Tyus a great bit, but Eric Bledsoe was bigger, stronger. He's longer. He brings more position flex. So even though they're both only 6'1", Eric Bledsoe's really strong, like 215 pounds, 220. So he you can steal some minutes with him at the shooting guard. I think he has like a 6'8 wingspan. I mean, it's just an upgrade. I mean, it's just no question about it. I love Tyus, but Tyus is a smaller guard, and when his shot's not falling, I mean, you can look at it. I know a lot of people would probably say he's a better passer, better at running offense. But just overall, what Bledsoe brings to the table would definitely be an upgrade there. So if they do make this trade, it's about that 10 pick. But I would hope that they would have Bledsoe in uniform. And it also gives you options, because you could then take Tyus and possibly package him maybe with the 51st pick or Grayson Allen and try to move back in the first round and pick up another pick. Then you're really rolling in, man. You can bring in two young players to fit with the score, and it kind of consolidates a little bit. So that's what we've been talking about a lot lately, and that kind of helps in that way too.
For sure. This is my thing. The argument for Tyus being the better player, all the points that you made were great. Tyus is a better floor general. But that's literally where it stops. That's it. Eric Bledsoe is a former all-defensive player.
Yeah, two-time.
Yeah. You know, like, so he's not a slouch. Did he have a bad year in New Orleans last year?
Yeah.
Sure, he did. The fit there was questionable at best anyway. It just did not work out. Yeah. You know, I can understand some concerns with Bledsoe. You know, the thing in Phoenix, he wanted out of Phoenix. And so, you know, you question, well, is he going to be trouble in the locker room? Is he going to cause issues there? You didn't hear about any of that in New Orleans. I don't think that's going to be an issue moving forward. It's 100% an upgrade over Tyus Jones. And on top of that, he can play the two. He's a little undersized, but he's capable of playing the two. And, you know, when you get down to it and you're running a 7-8, maybe like at a max 9-man rotation when it comes to closing the season or playoffs, he's a guy that you can play alongside Ja Morant. And he's going to be fine with or without the ball. He can play with or without the ball. You know, the size is really the only thing that's kind of, to me, a downfall. You know, at 6'1", he's not a big guy, but he plays big on the defensive end.
Yeah.
And that's, we've talked about it on here before. I've talked about it with multiple people on Twitter. You have to have a guard that is a good defender next to Ja Morant right now, because Ja has not proven that he can be, on a consistent basis, an above average defender. So you can't hide. You cannot have two guards out there that cannot play defense. It's not going to end well for you. The other teams know. And so they're going to attack your weak spots. But, you know, getting up to 10 is huge. But I think we've talked about a playing veteran. This is a guy, Eric Bledsoe's been in the league for a while. He's had some success. He has not been good in the playoffs. He was not good in the playoffs. He basically disappeared for the Bucks, and that's why they went, you know, that's why they moved him. They went after Drew Holiday. It paid off for him, worked out well, but he does have that experience. And so I am all about this trade. I feel like it's a win-win for the Grizzlies. You get up into a higher level of talent at the 10 pick. You know, we were talking a little bit before we got on here, but these are some names, and I've got a few different draft boards up here. But at 10 and after, you're talking Josh Giddey, Moses Moody, which Moody is probably your target there.
Yeah,
Moody is,
I would, you know, think so.
But
yeah.
Josh Giddey, Moses Moody, Keon Johnson, Davion Mitchell, Jalen Johnson. That, you know, these guys, there's one side here that James Bouknight's available at 10. Dude, I would lose my damn mind. If you guys have listened to any of our draft shows, you know how I feel about James Bouknight. But, you know, there's just a separation there between the top 10 guys, and then you have a little bit of a fall off. And even Franz Wagner, he's not a guy that I'm a fan of. I know that you have kind of warmed up to him little bit lately.
Just a little bit, yeah.
But, you know, he's still not a guy that I'm a huge fan of, but I can understand why they would be looking at him because of his ability on the defensive end and as a secondary playmaker. You know, there's plenty of arguments to be made as to why you would take him at 10. So, you know, it's tough because if you're making this trade, first you've got to wait. So it can't be like official.
Yeah, it has to be after the draft.
Because
you have to win some stuff, and most people suspect it'll be either you opt out of Winslow, which none of that can happen until after the draft, and it will be the Pelicans would take whoever the Grizzlies want them to take at 10, and Grizzlies would take whoever the Pelicans want at 17, and you have to deal with all that. So it would be after the draft, but they just agree to the framework, basically, if it happens, and that's kind of how that works. And I think that's what we're looking at. I think the Grizzlies would probably not opt into Winslow, which all this time we've kind of been thinking that was going to happen, but you just never know what opportunities are going to afford yourself. And when I mentioned at the top of the show about Bleacher Report, what kind of gives us more fuel is Woj tweeted out, and he didn't mention the Grizzlies specifically, but he kind of mentioned that the Pelicans were trying to use Bledsoe in that 10th pick and possibly move down in the draft to get out their contract. So that kind of adds some more fuel to this being legit. And so a couple different NBA sites have picked it up. So it's interesting, man. And it's going to make this thing fun, but I'm all in on this. I think this would be a fantastic move for the Grizzlies because, I mean, it's basically you're not losing anything. I mean, I see some of the fans that are same fans that want them to get rid of Winslow don't like this deal, but you're basically what you would be doing is absorbing Bledsoe's contract for next year into Winslow's contract plus a little bit more. I expect the Grizzlies to probably send another player out. It could be Grayson. It could be Tyus Jones. Who knows what? I think there'll be one player, but you would have been basically playing Winslow what you're playing Bledsoe anyway. So the Grizzlies aren't really losing anything here. I mean, this is just a way of to kind of use that cap space for a year instead of in a weak free agent class. I don't think they were going to go out and make a big-time move anyway. It's like borrowing that cap space for a year, allowing you to move up in the draft, and then next year again, only 3.9 guaranteed, you'd be right back basically where your cap space was for 22. So, I mean, this is really a win-win for the Grizzlies. They're not really losing anything here.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, another ESPN guy, Jonathan Giovanni, you know, he's a draft expert for ESPN, yeah, but he's another guy that's mentioned this. So there's a number of different guys that are credible sources that have mentioned this. So, you know, you always, there tends to be a lot of like fan base talking amongst fans of, you know, who's this or who's that or whatever. But, you know, these, like you said, Woj didn't mention the Grizzlies specifically, but he did talk about the Pelicans and them shopping that pick. And there's a number of different guys that have said something about it. So I think that it is a fairly credible, you know, like this is something that actually has traction. This is not just smoke and mirrors. My question to you would be this. If you're the Grizzlies, you're negotiating this deal with the Pelicans. Is it hinging on one player? Does it have to be Moses Moody has to be available at 10 or we're not making this trade? That's the guy that a lot of people are speculating they want to target with the 10th pick is Moses Moody. But, you know, you look around at mock drafts. There's one that has Moses Moody going number 7 to Golden State.
Yeah. So there's some smoke there for sure.
If Moses Moody is off the board, do the Grizzlies walk away from this trade?
For me, I wouldn't, because I think there's several guys that in that position that I'd be interested in. You talk about, will James Bouknight be on the board there? You know how much I love Josh Giddey. I mean, you like Jalen Johnson. I mean, there's a lot of guys. Franz Wagner is a guy that I'm at the point now where I think I would take him there, and that's crazy because I was all the way off of him early in the process, and anybody that listens to our podcast here know that we weren't a fan of his, but so many people liked him. I'm like, what are they seeing with this guy? And so I just kept watching him, and I see his defensive potential at that size, man. I kind of see the vision. So he's another guy that I would be interested in, and he's the type of player that you think the Grizzlies would like, well, with that size and playmaking ability and ability to shoot the basketball and trying to get bigger on the wing. I can see him being a guy that Kleiman in his front office would like. So there are several guys. Now, Moody would be optimal. I mean, I think he's at the top of your list. Now, we're not talking about anything crazy like the Grizzlies moving into the top 5-6. But once you get below that tier, I think Moody would probably be at the top of your list. Now, Bouknight would probably be at the top of yours, I got a feeling. But either one of those guys would be fantastic. I mean, you just talk about with Bouknight, that microwave-type scorer off the bench that the team need. A guy to just come in as just a bucket. And, I mean, that's James Bouknight to a T. I mean, you look at the three-point shoot numbers. They weren't good, but that doesn't bother me. I think he'll be a good three-point shooter. That's fine. He's a good free throw shooter. I don't have any problems with that. I think he has more potential. I think it was like 31 or 29% something, but I think he had the ball in his hand so much, and he would end up having to take a lot of shots at the end of the shot clock. I mean, he was the guy that the defense keyed on. So I think he'll
quality
be fine
of looks,
there.
Man. Yeah. Quality of looks makes all the difference.
Yeah, I definitely think he'll be fine there. So either one of those guys, but if you could get any of those guys that I just named, man, I'd be fantastic. And again, it just gives you another level of guy. And I think these guys are guys that you could foreseeably put next to Jai and Jared, who are your cornerstones, and build something going in the future. Maybe you have your big three because you need another guy on the wing. And again, any of these guys that we just named could end up being that level of player, I think.
Yeah. And you know, this is way, way like complete long shot. You know, there's talks of Jonathan Kuminga falling. You know, if Kuminga falls to 10, dude, that is, you know, are you taking Kuminga over Moody? I know between Moody and Bouknight, you know, Moody is yours. Like, that's your choice. And I understand it. There's arguments to be made either way. But if you get there, if you get to 10 and you have Moody and Kuminga on the board, which, again, it's a complete long shot. There's just been kind of rumblings that, you know, some people are souring on Kuminga. They're worrying about his ability to score at the next level. Where are you at with that? If Kuminga falls to 10, is he above everybody else for you?
Yeah, if Kuminga's there at 10, I'm going with Kuminga. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I don't agree with the kind of their assessment of him and scoring-wise. I think you just look at the guys in this draft, and he could – I think his talent level, his upside is so immense that if you looked up 4 or 5 years down the line and he was the best player out of this draft, that wouldn't totally surprise me. Now, I don't necessarily expect that, but I think he has that type of upside. And I think getting him at 10 would just be ski mask. Like, I think it'd be absolute robbery to better get him there at 10, because I would have never dreamed that the Grizzlies would have opportunity to be in position to draft him. So if he's there, I'm going him. But I think Moody is at the top there. But again, Bulk Knight, love to have him. Giddy. I mean, you know, I love him. There's guys there that that I think really makes this trade worthwhile, even if it's not Moody.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. I feel like Kuminga is getting it held against him that he played against grown men, right? You know,
absolutely.
15 points, 7 rebounds, just under 3 assists. You know, is turnovers maybe a little bit high at 2.6 turnovers per game, but he's playing in the G League, and we've talked about the separation of talent between NCAA Division I and the G League. There's definitely a talent gap there, and I don't get it. Every bit of film, every bit of research, I didn't honestly dive into Kuminga as much as I have some of these other guys, because I didn't expect him to even be in play for the Grizzlies. I'm thinking, you know, he's a top 5, maybe 6 type player, but there's just been rumblings that maybe he falls, you know, that some people are souring on him. That's, you know, it's a dream, right? That's more than likely not going to happen. I don't really see him falling that far, but, you know, just throwing that in there, there are a number of different guys that could be there at 10 that would be a good fit for the Grizzlies. Jalen Johnson is a guy that we haven't really talked about him a ton, but you know, his playmaking ability and his size, I don't even hate him at 10, man. If something happens and Moody is off the board, Jalen Johnson is another guy that they could draft. And I think that he could come in and make an impact almost immediately. So, you know, there's at least 4 or 5 guys that for the Grizzlies make this trade a win-win for them.
Yeah, and with Jalen Johnson, the more I've watched of him, the more I liked. I was kind of didn't like the way he kind of left the team in the middle of the year, but I talked with him in the media availability that they had for some of the prospects, and that's continuing tomorrow. And I like what he had to say, and I believed him. He kind of talked about how he hates this perceived worry about his attitude, red flags, whether he really cares about the game, and he said he hates that because it's not him at all. I mean, he said that he loved his time at Duke, really appreciated what Coach K did for him and the time that he was there. And he said that he just hates that narrative is out there, because anybody knows him knows that that's not his character. He's not a quitter, and that he's coming in 100% coachable and ready to do whatever the team that drafts him needs him to do to help win. And I mean, I believe it was genuine. And watching this film, man, I'm higher on him than I was. And I think him at that size, I mean, I think it's tremendous potential there, point forward, the way he can play guard multiple positions. So I like him as well, and I wouldn't be mad at him at 10, because I'm really a lot higher on him than I was probably a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think the media interviews, and he's had a few, you know, we had the media availability. I unfortunately was not able to make it to that. I'm glad Isaac got in on that. But, you know, he said he took that time off to get ready.
Yeah.
And he put in the work. And, you know, obviously he's not going to say anything, but you know, he's like, oh yeah, I quit on my team. That you're not going to say that. You know that he's not going to say that, but he seems sincere when he's saying, you know, like, that's not my mentality. That's not who I am. When you go back and you watch and you listen, you know, I always say you can read a person to a certain extent. And, you know, if somebody's trying to just throw smoke up, I think a lot of times it's easy to see through it. And I don't feel like that's the case with him.
He definitely seemed genuine. I didn't believe he was just saying something. It seemed real. And again, I mean, he's extremely talented. And again, I think he's dropping it. If it wasn't for that situation, if he had played the whole season, I don't even think he'd be in that range. You'd probably be talking 5, 6, 7, 8 pick for him. I don't even think he'd be talking about it. There's some box that have him in the mid, like 15, 16 now. And I think that's simply because of how that situation went down. Even in high school, he transferred a couple of times and had to sit out part of his senior year. So it's not a lot of tape on him. But if the time that you've seen him, I see some things I think that could really, really translate, and then you could end up getting a steal, a player that should probably be top 5, top 6. You might get him 10 through 15. And I mean, so you could end up getting a lot of bang for your buck there. So he's definitely a guy that I'd have in consideration.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%, man. So I think we originally were going to talk about our top three guys that we like for the Grizzlies at 17. And I feel like we're going to go ahead and do that right now, just because, you know, there's a lot of talks. We don't have any guarantees on this 10th pick thing, but there's plenty of guys that I want to talk about. And we've talked about all of these prospects before, but as we're getting closer to the draft, we want to bring them back up. We want to talk to you guys about them and just kind of refresh some of these guys. We talked about them early, some of them a little bit later. But for me, my top guys for the Grizzlies at 17 has changed, man, from the first episode that we recorded for draft coverage. It's changed a ton since then. And so, you know, let's talk about it, man. If the Grizzlies don't make this trade, if they're on the board at 17, who are your top three guys, Isaac?
Well, first I want to preface this and make sure our listeners understand. These are guys that we think have a realistic shot of being there at 17. Because I know as soon as we say these guys, they're going to be like, what about Jalen Green? He's not your top guy. We're not talking top 5, top 10, top 12 guys. We're talking guys that we think will realistically be there if the Grizzlies do stay at 17. So I want to preface that, because I've had people on Twitter like, man, you want everybody. And I'm like, there are different tiers of guys. Like, when yeah, I talk about Moody, that's not a guy that I think is going to be there at 17. That's like my dream pick, like if they move up, which there's some rumors that they could do that now. And then I'll say, I like Dorte. And they're like, oh, well, I thought you liked Moody. I don't have those guys in the same tier. And they'll even bring up some of the second-round guys I mentioned. Like, those are guys that I like at 51 if the Grizzlies move into the late first, early second. So that's kind of, I wanted to preface with that so they'd understand. But go ahead.
I want to get one thing in here real quick, kind of along the same lines that you were talking about. The way that so I have guys that I like. Obviously, you know, like Cade and Green and Mobley, like these top five guys, we like them. We know that they are better prospects. But the way that I narrow this down, I love James Bouknight. He's been number one for me. He'd be, you know, whether the Grizzlies are 10 or 17, I would love to see them get him. So he's still top of the list for me. But the way that I've done this, the way I prepared for this episode, is I look through a number of different mock drafts. And if there was not a single mock draft that had a guy that I liked falling to 17 or later, he's not on my list. So there's guys that I've mentioned before that I'm not going to talk about in this because they just were not on a mock draft anywhere past 17. And, you know, to me, we don't need to talk about Moses Moody at 17 because Moses Moody is not going to be there at 17.
No.
We don't need to talk about James Bouknight at 17 because he's not going to be there at 17. These are simply guys that we like if the Grizzlies don't move. And these are guys that we have seen in multiple different places that are going to be available around the 17th pick. So now I'll let you go with your three guys, man.
Yeah, well, I think if anybody listens to our podcast here or follows me on Twitter, they know who my top guy is at 17. And I'm, hear that? Pounding the table for my guy, man. It's Chris Duarte, man. 6'6", 190-pound senior shooting guard out of Oregon. We had draft analyst Mike Weisenberg here on our last podcast. He's an Oregon alum and lives in Portland, so he's not biased, right? But none. He kind of agrees with me in my assessment of Chris Duarte. But I mean, you when you bring him up, people talk about him being 24. But what I say about that, you know what? He being 24, you know what that means? He's a grown ass man. I mean, he's coming in. He's ready to compete. He's not a guy that you're gonna have to send down to South Haven. He's a plug and play guy. And again, when I bring him up, people like, well, what about upside? Who needs upside when you're already good? I think you talk about upside, and when you get outside the lottery, a lot of times, and go back and look, most of these guys don't reach that upside. And if you can get a guy that's already really good, I don't think you need that upside. And I think, I mean, other people might not be as sure as I am, but I'm about 99% sure this guy's going to come in and be able to contribute day one. And I feel like at 17, if you're outside the lottery, if you can get a guy that you know is going to be a pretty good player, I think that's a good bet, and give me that guy. And that's kind of the way that I view it, and that's why I like him so much. But as far as his game, at 17.1 points, 4.6 rebounds, 2.7 assists, 2 steals, almost a block a game, 42% from 3, 81% for the free throw line, 63% from two, 53% field goal. So, I mean, just extremely efficient score. Just doesn't really have a weakness. I mean, a guy that almost a block a game at 6'6 from his shooting guard position. Talk about adding size on the wing, man. He definitely brings that. And he just takes the guesswork out of it for me at 17. And so I just think that's something. I mean, if you can get him there, I just think that's fantastic. But again, big guard at 6'6, does a fantastic job of moving around the basketball, and finds his spots, which is, you know, I love guys that can move around and find their own shot. Plays extremely hard. I mean, if you watch any of his games, he always seems to be extremely locked in. He's intense, high intense all the time. He's a gamer, as they say. Seems to always love to mix it up, love to try to guard the opposing team's best player. I mean, just a three-level scorer, elite three-point shooter, good rebounder. I think a guy that's, again, just not going to need a lot of grooming coming in. And you look at this roster. I know you don't have a lot of room for a rookie, but, I mean, he's not a guy you're going to send down to South Haven. But I do think some way, somehow, before the season starts, I think there's going to be some consolidation on the wings on this roster. And I think he's a guy that can slide right in again off the bench and play some minutes for this team. You want me to go ahead and go with all three guys, or?
Yeah, we can. I just want to mention something real quick. We were talking about, you mentioned upside. And so I'm going to go back to the 2009 draft. I'm not going to even mention who the Grizzlies drafted. If you don't know who they drafted, you can go and search for it. I'm not going to mention his name. But I do want to talk about three players that went 4, 5, 6. Tyreek Evans, Ricky Rubio, and Johnny Flynn. Right? Tyreek Evans had a decent NBA career. Right? Yeah, he was a serviceable NBA player. Even I would say at many points in his career, you would say that he was a good NBA player.
Yeah, sure.
Ricky Rubio, Ricky Rubio that's a fine fifth pick for the career that he's had in the NBA. I'm fine with Ricky Rubio there. Johnny Flynn, he did not last in the NBA. All three of these guys were taken ahead of Steph Curry. So, you know, somebody in the draft process, somebody in that room for Sacramento and Minnesota, they were like, these guys we think are going to pan out and be better than Steph Curry. And we all know how that worked out. We know, like, Steph Curry is the best player in this draft, one of the best players to play the game. And so you miss, like, front offices miss. You cannot bank on an upside is good. But the reality is, upside does not always pan out. And, you know, sometimes you take a shot with your first round pick and you just miss on it, man. And so a guy like Duarte is definitely a safe pick, and he fills a lot of the needs that the Grizzlies have. The competitiveness, that's something that Derek Murray, that came on from Basketball News, he said, people don't understand how much this kid wants to win. He wants to win. And that is something. Going out there and playing the game is good, but there's a difference between, like, when you're in the game wanting to win, and then, like, no matter what's going on all the time, winning is what you want to do. Like, there's levels of it. And from what I've understood, the people that we've talked about, Duarte is a guy that he is willing to do whatever it takes to win. And, you know, you can kind of maybe toss that out there for a lot of different people, but it's not the same. You know, there's 100% levels to that. And so that's something he is not in my top three, but I understand why he's in your top three, and I would not be disappointed if the Grizzlies don't move up and they take him there.
Yeah, I mean, and what you talk about, that point, I mean, when you watch him, it's very similar to Dylan Brooks. And people have kind of criticized Dylan Brooks over time, and, I mean, you can go back to early in his career. You can talk about that and some stuff that went on there. But I've never criticized him as much as others, because I don't think it's necessarily he was trying to be selfish. I feel like he was doing it all in the vein of trying to win. He felt like this team, and he was one of the only guys on this team that could score. And he felt like they needed him to take those shots. And I think sometimes he might get a little overzealous and feel like, man, I got to take these shots, and he ends up taking bad shots. But, I mean, he's been better at that, especially this last year. And that's why I never really kind of criticized him for that, because I always felt like it was in the vein of, man, I want this team to win. And I feel like at times I'm got to put them on our back scoring wise and take some shots that I don't think anybody else on this team can make. And I think that's kind of what you see there. So that competitiveness is definitely not something to me. There's different levels to it, like you said. Some guys you could say that about, but I think with Duarte and guys like Dylan Brooks, there's competitive level. It's different with those guys. I mean, you could even say that with Ja. I mean, you could just see when you watch Duarte play, just a different level of intensity that you don't see with a lot of guys. So that is definitely one of the attributes about him that I like the most. And man, I get it, man. I know he's 24 years old. I know that a lot of people want these young guys, 18 years old, that you kind of mold and feel like they could possibly turn into a superstar. But you could catch lightning with a ball, like you said, and a guy that could turn into a superstar. And you don't feel like Duarte has that ceiling. But again, when you get especially into picks like middle of the draft, like 17, man, if you can get a guy like Duarte, again, that I think is plug and play, I think that's not a bad move at all there. And that's why he's at the top of my board. Second guy, again, talk about size on the wing this team needs, Trey Murphy III, 6'9", 206 pounds, 7-foot wingspan, junior wing out of the University of Virginia. When you look at his numbers, the numbers don't stand out to you on the surface. 11.3 points, 3.4 rebounds, 1.2 assists, about a steal a game, 43.3% from three on five attempts, 52-120 overall, 92.7% from the free throw line, and 62% from two. Again, the numbers on the surface don't jump out at you, but I've said before, you have to kind of evaluate these Virginia guys differently. The system that they run isn't designed for individual accolades. It's extremely team-oriented concept. So, but when you look at these, the offensive numbers, the numbers don't, the 11.3 points don't jump out at you, but 43.3% from three on five attempts per game, 93% from the free throw line, and 62% from two. Those numbers stand out to me. Extremely efficient offensively. And again, 6'9", a guy that can play three and four, can guard to guard all three of those positions. He's not a guy that, I think if the drawback for him is he's not a guy that can really create his own shot. I mean, I think that might be something that he can improve upon when he gets to the NBA, because he's not the most explosive guy. But if you kind of watch some of those draft videos, I mean, he is a better athlete, it looks like, the eye test-wise, than you kind of saw at Virginia. I think Virginia is a school that kind of holds you back a little bit, some of the things. I think if he had went to another school, I think we'd be talking about a guy that could possibly be going in the lottery. But I think playing at Virginia, I think that kind of hides some of your potential at times, because, again, it's so team-oriented. But I think this is a guy that has another level that we haven't seen yet. And that size, I mean, 6'9", 206, and a 7-foot wingspan for this team. I mean, I think he's exactly what this team needs on the wing. I mean, they got to get bigger. We saw that exploited in the series against Utah. And I think he's a guy that could go a long ways in to kind of fixing that. I mean, because, I mean, you just don't see a lot of guys 6'9 that can play the two in the NBA. And I think he's a guy that can really do that. Really good catch and shoot basketball player, just elite 3-point shooter. And we know this team needs more shooting. And we talk about shooting along with size, and he brings both of those things. So I love the fit of him with the Grizzlies.
Yeah, he's actually a guy. He's number two on my list as well. You know, 42% on catch and shoot threes. His motion, just quick, smooth, straight to the point. There's not a lot of wasted movement in it. And defensively, you said he could guard two through four. I'd venture to say that he could guard one through four with no problems.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, he probably could guard one. You're right.
His footwork is really, really good. He's a really good on-ball defender. And when you watch film on him, something that Dylan Brooks prides himself on is getting skinny whenever it comes to screens.
Yeah.
And Trey Murphy does that at an elite level, man. He can get through screens really, really well. Man, at 6'9", the big wingspan, that is just screaming all defensive player, man. I really like this kid. He's number two on the list for me. You talked about his ability to create his own shot. In the half court, he was finishing 66% at the rim because he uses that length to his advantage. He uses that length to, you know, ward off defenders and be able to still finish. He only took 12 shots off of the dribble last year, but I don't think that's indicative of what he's capable of.
No, I definitely think he has upside there.
Yeah, I think that he is that's not going to be like the number one part of his game. You know, creating his own shot is not going to be a strong point of his game, but I think that he'll be able to do it at a level that he'll be able to do it at a high enough level that he's going to be effective at the next level. So that way he's definitely a guy, you know, talking about size on the wing, man, I versatility, the way this league is going to, you know, like a positionless basketball, playing him as, you know, a small ball four, man, it would just be, I think, a defensive lineup. I picture, you know, Ja's not a great defender, but you could have Trey Murphy, Dylan Brooks, Jaren Jackson, and Kyle Anderson, depending on what happens with him. You know, you could have those five guys all on the floor at the same time, and literally,
man,
four out of five of those guys
handcuffs, man.
You know, they can guard whoever they're on. It doesn't matter if a switch happens. And he was not a guy that was near the top of my list to begin when we started getting into this. And the more I watch him, the more I've studied him. He's definitely someone, and you see his name kind of further down in the draft. But I've said this before, and I'll say it a million times. I don't care what number you're drafting at. If it's your guy, if he's there and you feel that good about him, take him. It does. So, yeah, he is 20. They got him 20 going to the Hawks on Tankathon.
I've seen he's all over the place.
Basketball News has got him right around that range, 21 to the Knicks. So, yeah, oh, well, maybe it's a little bit early. Maybe you're reaching. Man, it's four picks, and the talent difference between pick 17 and probably pick 35 in this draft, you can make an argument for any of those guys. Is Trey Murphy going to be more effective than Bones Highland or Cam Thomas? You know, like, I don't know. I can't tell you that for sure, but you don't have an argument to tell me 100% for sure that Bones Highland is going to be more effective than Trey. So that's a very interesting name whenever it comes to 17. If the Grizzlies don't end up moving up, I would love to see them take a chance on him. But, you know, at the end of the day, I really feel like Duarte would be the guy that they target at 17 because he kind of fits the profile of what the Grizzlies target.
Yeah, we've seen that MO from them when you talk about Brandon Clark or Desmond Bane and Xavier Tillman are taking these upperclassmen, older guys that are ready to come in and step up. So that would definitely make a lot of sense. Now, we've also talked about this could be the year where they take a swing. So who knows? But if they did take Duarte there, if they did stay at 17, definitely wouldn't surprise me at all. But to go back to Trey Murphy, was a guy when we first started talking about this, was a guy that you mostly saw early second round in mocks. But I've talked to a lot of draft guys who say that a lot of teams like him. And they expect him probably not to make it past 20 now. And I think, I don't know if that was the ESPN mock I saw today, he had the Grizzlies taking him 17. It might have been the ESPN mock, but I've seen him, saw one mock had him at like 13. So he's really risen. I mean, he's been a workout wonder. And then people talk about him not being explosive. But if you watch, I know this gets no defense, but I watched some of those workouts at the combine. And, man, it's that guy, he can get off the deck. I mean, you saw some of the dunks that he was doing. People talk about not athletic, man. I don't know. I just think that offense and Tony Bennett, That offense just holds you down so much. I mean, you look at their team, I think Sam Hauser was their number one scorer, and I think he's like 14 points a game. I mean, you're not going to have these big gaudy numbers at Virginia because, again, that offense is just so team-oriented. You're not going to have one guy average 20 points a game. If you average 12 like Trey Murphy at Virginia, that probably means you'd average 20, 21 at some other school. I mean, I just think that's kind of how that offense holds you down, and that's the reason why I think he – probably has some things in his game that might, you know, you get to the NBA and he's a little better at than you think he was just because of watching him playing that offense. And I think if he had went to another school, I think we'd be talking about a guy that's going higher in the draft. But my third guy, and I don't know if the Grizzlies are really looking at bigs. We kind of see some of the names that they worked out. And I asked this prospect during the media availability the other day, had he worked out for the Grizzlies or heard from the Grizzlies? He said he hasn't. But this guy is Kai Jones, 6'11", 221 pounds, 7'1" wingspan, out of Texas, 8.8 points, 4.8 rebounds, a block a game, 69% from the free throw line, 38% from three. Now, only took 34 threes on the season, but for a guy his size, I mean, 13 to 34, small sample size, but he took 34 of them and 38%. So I think there is some potential there, shooting upside, but he's super long and above the rim, really good at open court. has really good handles for a big. He's got his own ability to take his man off the dribble, good shot blocker. And we just saw JV get ate up in the pick and roll against Gobert in the playoffs against Utah. And Kai Jones is a player that can absolutely fix that. I mean, he really excels in the pick and roll. I mean, he can get out and guard smaller players, get back into his recovery is one thing. On defense is one thing that I really like about him. He does need to get stronger at 221 pounds, but I think he kind of has the frame to kind of fill out a little bit more. But he's a player that I think has tremendous upside on both ends. And, again, I love those three-point shooting numbers despite the fact that he only shot 34. I think he's a guy that can improve upon it and be a guy that's a capable three-point shooter in the NBA.
Yeah, so you and I had two out of three the same. I've got one different. Kai Jones is my number one, and for a lot of the reasons you just talked about. One thing that he hasn't been playing the game very long. He's only been playing for about 5 years. So, you know, he's still extremely raw. There's a lot of untapped potential. And, man, Taylor Jenkins and this coaching staff has done a great job at getting guys to, you know, up their game. Dylan Brooks is a guy, you know, like he wasn't the most efficient player this year, but he was significantly more efficient this year than what he was in previous years. Kyle Anderson, yeah, he was coming off the injury, and some people give a lot of credit to that. But I think the confidence comes from this coaching staff and telling him, hey, take those shots. When you're open, when they leave you open, take those shots. And Kyle Anderson had a career year. JV is another guy, career year. This coaching staff has proven time and time again that they can get a lot out of these guys. And so that's why, you know, Kai Jones was, he was one for me. There was only, I want to say one or two places where they had him slip into 17, but that was enough for me. That's what I was looking for. I was praying that I would find somewhere that had him falling, because I wanted to talk about him. And that is, I've said it time and time again, I'm not convinced that Jaren is ever really going to play the five effectively. I feel like Kai Jones, if you come in and that's what you're, you know, hey, this is what we want you to be, I think that he can do that. I feel like he's got the tools. Obviously, at his size, he's going to have to bulk up. He's going to have to put on some weight. But go back and look at guys. You know, Giannis is a great example, and I'm not. Please do not take this as I'm comparing Kai Jones.
People will, man. People think they'll take things and run with it for sure.
I'm not saying that Kai Jones is Giannis, but if you go back and you look at Giannis's size the year that he was drafted as to what he is now, these NBA weight training programs can put muscle on people. And you add 15, 20 pounds of muscle to Kai Jones and he maintains his athleticism, there's not going to be many guys in this league. I don't know that there'd be anybody that he couldn't guard. And he's still pretty raw of a prospect, only playing the game for 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, he said his media availability was something that kind of surprised me. He said that he expects to play some three in the NBA. So, like you said, I mean, he's a guy that brings tremendous position flex. I mean, I think he can guard 3, 4, 5. I mean, that's how good his feet is and how good he can move at 6'11". And to your point, I remember – back in one of the pregame media availabilities in the playoffs with the Grizz and Jazz, I asked Quinn Snyder about their relationship because Taylor Jenkins coached under him in the G League. And I asked him about that kind of relationship. And the first thing that he said, and he recognized really early on with Taylor Jenkins, that he was special in getting the most out of players in development. He said that's one thing that he saw really early on with Taylor Jenkins. And we've seen that with this team. I mean, was he talking about Dylan and the strides that he's made? You talk about Kyle Anderson and the strides that he's made. We've really seen this coaching staff have that ability to get guys in and work on certain parts of their game and improve. So development is definitely, if you're talking about development, I don't have any worries about this coaching staff coming in, a guy coming in, and they've been able to develop him. And Kai Jones is, like you said, extremely raw, young, hasn't been playing the game for a long time, but you just see some of the skills there. And I think on both ends of the floor that he could be a tremendous player. And again, they need a guy because, I mean, JV just – it's not much you can do at this point. I mean, he pretty much is what he is defensively. So they need a guy that could, again, rotate and play that pick and roll. And from weak side, strong side, getting out to guard the perimeter to getting back into the paint, I mean, I think Kai Jones could be elite defensively in the pick and roll, and having that potential there, again, is something I love. Now, I don't know, again, if the Grizzlies are looking at bigs. We haven't really heard them interview or talk to any bigs, but, and I said this on Twitter the other day, teams draft guys all the time that they haven't talked to, so mm-hmm. don't always look at that and say, oh, well, they didn't work this guy out. That means they don't like him. You just never know what's going to happen on draft night. They might not think Kai Jones would be there at 17 if they're 17, so they think, oh, well, we're not going to bring this guy in. But if he would slip to 17, he could be a guy they really love and just didn't work out, and they could take him back. So you just never know.
Yeah, could have seen plenty on film to know that.
Hey, oh, yeah, they know all these guys no matter what.
Yeah, they do tons and tons of research. So that is something I don't put a lot of weight into that. I like hearing whenever the Grizzlies are working out certain guys and stuff like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, could be just them throwing up, you know, the smoke and mirror show for other teams. So they don't really know who they're targeting.
For sure.
And that may be the case with my third player that I like at 17 for the Grizzlies. It's Josh Christopher, 6'5 guard out of Arizona State. I say 6'5". I find different measurements for him, like between 6'3 and 6'5". So I don't really – I know that that's kind of a pretty big range there. But, you know, he does have a 6'9 wingspan, so that's a plus. But we talked about Grizzlies needing shooting. 30.5% from three on four attempts is not great. But the reason that I like him so much is his ability to create space for himself. Shooting the ball is great. Shooting is fantastic. But the one thing that the Grizzlies are one thing that the Grizzlies lacked is players that are able to create their own shot. They have Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks. And right now, that's all that you can say for sure that are capable of creating their own shot. And Josh Christopher would be a guy coming in, I think, immediately that could, you know, maybe later on move into a starting role, but he could come off of your bench and be that guy that goes out there and gets his own shot, kind of the Lou Williams type player. I like his athleticism. He's really explosive, plays above the rim, just a highlight waiting to happen. You know, 68% from the field in transition, uses his body well. He's got a great layup package, uses his length to do well on the defensive end. He averaged 1.5 steals per game. He can rebound pretty well. His handle's fantastic. There's a lot of great things that Christopher brings to the table. And, you know, again, he's another guy that's kind of anywhere from like 20 to 28 on boards. But if they like him, and he is a guy that they worked out, he has a relationship with Ja Morant. He is a godson for
Grizzlies executive Tayshaun Prince.
So, you know, there are connections there already. And maybe this is a guy that they're looking at. I would not have an issue with it. Again, you know, he's third on my list, but any of these guys that we've talked about, these five guys that we've mentioned, I'm fine with any of them at 17 if that's where the Grizzlies stay. But, you know, after what we're hearing today, the Grizzlies may not be picking at 17 at all. So, you know, we'll see. That's my favorite part about the offseason, man, is just the unknown. You never know what's going to happen until it just goes down. So, we'll see.
Yeah, man, the finals were great. Don't get me wrong. But, man, I was ready to get that thing done, man, and get to the offseason, get to the draft. Because, I mean, this is – again, man, I love the season. Don't get me wrong and all that, man. But I love the offseason as well, man. Hope springs eternal. The Grizzlies are a young building team. It's a really exciting time for them in their development. So to have this draft coming up and be in a position they are is fun. And Josh Christopher would have been fourth on my list. So we're kind of on the same wavelength there with the kind of the players that we like. And who knows, even if they make that move and get the 10th pick, I kind of talked about that. They could open them up to do some other things. Maybe you package Tyus and Grayson and try to get in the 51 and try to get back into the first round. So maybe you get a guy at 10 and then come back late 20s, pick up Josh Christopher, because I know that seems like a guy that they really like. And a lot of things that you said, man, I think prototypical NBA shooting guard. I mean, it's like 6'5". He's a bigger guy, 215. So he's not slight. Brings a little bit of size there. Really can create his own shot. Uses his size and strength well, man. Can get into the lane and finish, like you said, extensive layup package. He can score from all three levels. Really good at the pull-up jump shot. Can create space. Knock down the mid-range, like three-level score. and man, athletic and really get off the deck. See some of the dunks that he had. So he's exciting there. I mean, I think he's a guy that's going to take time. A guy that you probably send down to South Haven and do some grooming. And if you get that 10th pick and take a guy there, that gives you even more opportunity to take another guy that you can send down and develop down there. So kind of kill two birds with one stone. You get your rookie that you think can step in and get minutes for you immediately, and you get another developmental guy. I think that would be a fantastic draft if they were able to pull something off like that.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about the trades and stuff. I want to talk about one more guy but before we get out of here, and then we'll come back. We'll talk more about the second round guys on a later episode. We're pushing an hour here, so I don't want to run too long. But we were planning on talking about second round guys. We'll come back with another episode before the draft and talk about our favorites for the second round. But a guy that you guys have heard me mention multiple times, Joel Ai, and I want to talk about him here. And not that the Grizzlies are going to target him at 17, because I don't think that will be the case. But with all of the moving parts that we have right now with the talks of 10 and then maybe packaging different players to move up from 51, I think Ai fits what the Grizzlies target. And I'm going to tell you why. Sean Coleman, he's a part of Grizzly Bear Blues. He tweeted out and he talked about two stats the Grizzlies tend to focus on, or it appears that they tend to focus on whenever it comes to drafting players. And that's the true shooting percentage and the effective field goal percentage. Desmond Bane, TCU, he was 61.1% for his true shooting and 58.9% for his effective field goal. Brandon Clark was 64.3% and 64.2. Joel Ai last season at Gonzaga, 66.5 true shooting percentage and 64.7% effective field goal percentage. So all of those, like those numbers, I talk about him and I talk about being so high on him, and he's different places on the boards. I've seen him as high as about 24 and then as low as like 35. So there's a wide range on him. But he has two things that I really, really like, and I think he has two things that are elite. He's a great rebounder for the position. And when you talk about good rebounding guards, there's two guys that come to mind that are effective NBA role players. Do I think Ai is going to come in and be a superstar in the league? He's got a lot of work to do to get to that level. I don't think that it's impossible. I don't think it's probable. But I think that he will be in the league for a long time because he can play without the ball and he can rebound at an elite level for a guard. Josh Hart is a guy for the Pelicans that he's one of the best positional rebounders in the league. And then I've got to pull this other guy up. You may know him off the top of your head, Isaac, and I had it, but I'm forgetting his name. He's a backup guard for the Nets.
Backup for the Nets. Got it. And I know who you're talking about. I just came, but I can't. It's not coming to me. One thing about Ai, just like to your point, it's kind of similar to what I said about Trey Murphy for kind of a different reason. That Gonzaga team was so loaded. I mean, you had Kispert averaging high, you had Suggs averaging a lot of points. I mean, you had a lot of guys averaging double figures on that team. And I think with him, you kind of have to delve into those numbers a little deeper. And those two numbers that you threw out are staggering. I mean, those with a guy that was in a team that's loaded like that, that didn't get the shots that you would expect a first round guy to get, looking at those percentages, I think that really shows what this guy is capable of. I mean, and I think you can't look at the points per game averages. You have to dig deeper into their offensive numbers, and I think that's kind of one of the things that hold them back. Probably if he had went to another school similar to what I said about Trey Murphy, I think his numbers probably would have stood out a little bit more than what he ended up averaging. So that's kind of a point I wanted to make about that.
Yeah, he's a Bruce Brown is the guy that I was thinking of for the Nets.
Yeah,
but you know, Ai has shown that he can run the pick and roll. He's a good decision maker. He doesn't necessarily have to be the guy that's running the offense, but he's not a bad secondary decision maker. He would, you know, 41% on jump shots, 40% catch and shoot situations. He finished at 70%. And when he was the initiator in the pick and roll, he finished at 70% at the rim. So there's a lot of things in his game that I think are going to translate at the NBA level. And again, he's a guy I would love for them to take him at 17, but I just really like, I don't think that's going to happen, right? Just because of where he's at, the talks around him, they could trade back. Excuse me. They could trade back and get him later. So, you know, like they're probably not taking him at 17, but I will guarantee you that he has a long, successful career in the NBA because he can play without the ball and he can rebound. You do those two things at a high level, you're going to stick around in the league. And I think that he has all the tools to do that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Like, again, I agree with you. I don't think they take him at 17, but who knows what's going to happen, man. You never know what's going to happen. Again, they could move up to that 10th pick and you bring in Bledsoe. That kind of opens things up for you to possibly move Tyus or Grayson or package those guys with 51 and come back in and take a Josh Christopher or a Yai or another guy you kind of like in that range. And that's why this draft is so intriguing. I think the Grizzlies could do a lot of different things here. That's not even the only moves they can make. I mean, there's talk that Houston is shopping that 23rd and 24th pick. Maybe if you don't make the move to 10, you drop down with 17 and can pick up those two picks and take a couple guys there. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that could happen here. And I'm excited, man. We're only 4 days out, man. It seems like we've been talking about this draft for 5 years, man. And we're almost here. So I'm excited. And again, I mean, I think the rumors that are coming out makes this thing even more intriguing. So I can't wait for Thursday night.
Yeah. Yep. Same, man. And that's, you know, it's just going to everything that we've been talking about, all the possible trades. You know, we find out Thursday night, we say just a few days away here, and we will be back with more episodes between now and then. And then Derek Murray of Basketball News has agreed to come back on after the draft. Yeah, so whichever really direction the Grizzlies decide to go, we're going to have Derek back on. So he can give us a little more insight on what he thinks the fit is going to be and that person's role will be with the Grizzlies moving forward. I can't wait, man. I'm excited for it, and I've been excited for this draft ever since we started jumping into this class, and just getting to know some of these guys has made it even better for me.
Yeah, I've always been a draft junkie and broke down prospects, but I think this year even more than any year I've really delved into it. I mean, we've pretty much covered, like, I'd probably say 90% of the guys that are probably going to get drafted, we've at least mentioned at least a little bit. I mean, we've done extensive coverage. So I stress for anyone to go back and listen to our podcast that are ready for this draft, because we've talked about a lot of guys, had great guests on, man. All our guests have been great breaking down this draft. So go back and listen to our podcast. You go over at Hoopball Grizz and look back when you have the links to all those podcasts there with some great stuff, some great guests. So, again, check those out. You can follow me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals, ISAAC_Rivals. And you can get David at DWill2111. Again, go over to that Hoopball Grizz. Give us a follow. We really appreciate that. David, you have anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah, man. We need to get these in. And, you know, sometimes I get wrapped up in the podcast and forget to talk about it. But we got great partners over here at Hoopball One that we haven't mentioned in a while. We still have our promo code with Manscaped. The Lawnmower 4.0 is out right now. Manscaped engineers work on perfecting this technology. Best in the business. Lawnmower 4.0. Go over there. They've got more than just a lawnmower. They've got the nose and ear hair trimmer and all kinds of, you know, boxers. Just a number of different things for men's care over at manscaped.com. Go check them out. Use promo code Hoopball. It's going to get you 20% off of your order and free shipping. And we appreciate those guys partnering with us. We appreciate you guys listening. Other than that, I've got nothing, man. I'm ready for this draft. We'll be back later on in the week with some more shows. So we'll see you then.
Yeah, man. We'll see if these rumors even get any fire there from the smoke as the week goes on. But yeah, man, we're coming back later this week with more draft coverage. Until next time, man, we're going.
This has been a Hoop Bowl presentation.